Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Comic Book Club Live. Please give it up for your hosts, Alex and Pete.
Welcome to Comic Book Club. I'm Alex.
I am Pete.
And that's our man of the booth, Boothman Prime.
Boothman Prime?
Boothman Prime.
Boothman
Very exciting.
Prime.
We've been,
what's up?
I don't know if he knows this because there's maybe two Earth 1 and Earth 2 going on, but we've been alternating Boothmen. So I've been having a hard time keeping it straight in my head.
Well, guys, you just have to look to see which one it is.
I'm the all-new, all-different Boothman.
Wait, what? Isn't that the guy... Oh, God.
No, All-Star Boothman.
All-Star Boothman. Yeah, All-Star Boothman. I don't know what's going on.
Are you an 80-year-old man? Like, you can't keep...
All of this continuity stuff is very confusing. I can't keep it straight. Boothman Prime, how are you doing?
I'm good. I'm glad to be back, guys.
Yeah, glad to have you back.
Good to be back.
You excited this week? Captain America Civil War comes out?
Oh, my God. My mind is being blown. It 8 years ago, Iron Man came out.
Wow. No. That was 2 days ago now, right?
Was it? Was it
2 days? 8 years and 2 days.
Wow. That's insane.
That's incredible.
To me.
I will tell you, I remember, I think I saw Iron Man opening night. I was on assignment for some website, whatever website I was working for. And they're like, hey, go see the very first showing. And this is way back before the opening night was like 3 days earlier than actual opening of the movie.
Right.
I'm definitely sounding like I'm 80 right now. You're absolutely right. But I remember being in that audience, and it wasn't even sold out. Like, it was packed, and there was a fair amount of things being people.
Right.
But I can remember so clearly, like, most people just left as soon as the credits started.
Oh.
And there were just me and a couple of comic book nerds in there. And when Sam Jackson came out as Nick Fury, I remember this guy all the way in the front just going, yes! Yes! And screaming at the top
that
of the lungs.
Started it all.
It did. And there was that feeling when you saw that. Where were you when you first saw Iron Man, Pete?
Well, I was very excited because I've been a fan of Jon Favreau for a long time. I mean, the guy has comedy chops, improv skills. So, like, I was very excited about this guy.
Is that because you're a tiger or because you're a bunny? A bear or a bunny?
Yeah.
Okay, whatever.
Jesus Christ. You're this big bear, man, with these claws and these fangs, batting the little bunny around. Anyways, so I just was so happy that he was entrusted with a comic book property, and I was just, my mind was spinning with the ideas and possibilities, and the fact that he nailed it, like, the humor of Tony Stark a little bit was such a great, because he can be very dark, Tony Stark, depending on how it's done, and I just felt
with
like...
With the alcoholism, you
mean. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, also, like, a douchey millionaire, like, rich guy, could go a lot of different ways, you know, but...
Yeah. Could you, back then, when you were fresh and young, and we were all in our early 20s, I'm
sure. we had just started the show. Yeah.
Could you have pictured that literally everything would be superheroes 8 years later?
Nope.
Yeah, but it is, including our show, which is very exciting. Guys, we have a great guest. He works on a not-so-great comic book.
Fuck you.
Called, what is it called, Pete?
Fuck you again, you 80-year-old piece of shit. It's a great comic strip that he works on.
He works on a great comic strip called Captain Jones. I'll explain why I'm being a jerk in a second. Ladies and gentlemen, Tim Levine!
Tim Levine, yeah!
Oh, God!
Welcome to the show, sir. Have a seat.
Hello, thanks so much for coming. Welcome. So, you work, you do the art for a comic strip called Captain Jones.
That is correct.
That is written by this asshole.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Wait, so how did this happen? How did you guys get to, I feel like I'm going to be a ping pong all show.
There.
But how did the strip start? How did you guys start working on it?
Well, I did. I do art around the New York improv community, and one of my good friends, Sean Reedy, was on a improv team with Mr. LePage over there, and he said he was looking for an artist, and my friend said, "I know an artist," and that was me.
Yeah,
and then we met.
Well, yeah, we met at like this deli / restaurant in New York City.
Jesus, whose choice was that?
I think it was mine.
Because we wanted to meet near Midtown.
Yeah, Midtown Comics.
And Pete was like, "What's the dirtiest place we can?"
Yeah,
go?
Yeah, exactly.
It was one of those delis that's got like that vague
second floor like seating area. Yeah,
it's got like that vague European futuristic look. Like, everything's plastic.
Yeah.
Huh.
There's a bunch of like older gentlemen drinking beer.
Yeah, it's
like it's a bar.
Yeah, yeah,
it's
but funny. This was like 4 in the
That's
afternoon.
That's the same
yeah.
sort of place where Hemingway first wrote Old Man in the Sea.
Sure, yeah.
I'm
yeah,
sure that's
it's
accurate.
Very, it's very. A lot of people get inspired by that sort
yeah.
of thing.
Yeah, but yeah, Pete had a few ideas, and he asked me if
yeah,
I was
I pitched him a bunch
out.
Of different stuff, and then Captain Jones was the thing that spoke to him.
Yeah. yeah. So what is Captain Jones?
I'll
yeah. Why don't you?
Yeah,
feel
I'll
free.
Take this.
Feel free.
Wait, can I pitch it the way you pitch every comic book?
Sure.
It's really great.
Fuck you, man. I don't do that. I start to talk about some random tangential thing that doesn't make sense, and then you reel me in and be like, "Okay, if you've never read this book before, it's this, this, and this." And then I say, yeah, it's great.
All right, that's fair. So you do close with that.
Yeah, I do.
Okay,
yeah.
But do you think you can pitch this? Can you actually pitch Captain Jones?
Well, when you set me up like that, no, I can't. But I'm going to try.
All right, good.
Captain Jones is a cross between Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy and The Big Lebowski. It's kind of like a slacker superhero with a very creative backdrop and cast of characters.
Cool. That yeah. sounds good.
Yeah, and they have a spaceship that can turn into different things, and it's also kind of like a buddy duo comedy, and they just kind of fly around having their space pirates, and they have adventures.
So what's the back and forth like? He pitched the idea to you. Do you pitch ideas back to him, or is it mostly Pete writing and then you...
Well, that's the beauty of it. Like, I'll send him a script, and yeah. then what... He makes all these, like, amazing creative choices and hilarious cameos, like, stuff that just kind of blows me away.
Like what hilarious cameos?
He drew in Rose... I'm sorry, I keep talking for you.
it's okay, you're doing...
Yeah, if you could leave, that would be good.
Rosie from the Jetsons made a... Because I was like, okay, just have some robots in the background or something like that. And then, like, he used that kind of, like, for
an opportunity. Sorry, Rosie from the Jetsons.
Yeah, the remember the maid robot, Rosie?
Yeah, showed up. The yeah. copyrighted character, Rosie from
no,
the Jetsons.
No, Josie.
It's, yeah. Josie from the Retsons.
From the Retsons. Okay.
All right.
Yeah,
right. Yeah. I was going to say I'm a cop, so, you know, whatever.
I could have guessed that about you.
There was yeah. another one where Pete's script called for the two main characters to be in a bar, and then I basically just drew all the aliens from the cantina. Because, like, it's a bar in space.
Yeah,
what else
right.
is gonna, what
there's
else
a bar
be
in space.
There's
yeah.
only one bar
just
in space.
Just the one.
Yeah.
I guess two after The Force Awakens.
Yes,
well, that's
I
true.
Was gonna bar too.
That nice. Was kind of the same bar. Let's be fair.
It was just respects. Updated.
Yeah.
Yes. So you guys have a fair amount of back and forth. You throw in your own jokes. What is your process when you're drawing it?
Pete's script is, it, like, breaks it down.
Inscrutable?
Yeah. Is it inscrutable? Whatever. But his breakdown's pretty much, you know, panel by panel, and then I sketch it out. I'll do a rough layout, and then I'll ink it. And then I do, like, a third pass to add in as much detail as I can. Because, obviously, I'm not getting paid for this. Anyone well. Wants to pay me for it, they're welcome to. But, you know, I what ends up happening every single time is I will sketch something very rough, and then I'll ink it, and... then I'll be like, this needs more detail. And then I'll go back and then put in way more detail than I intended to. And then I feel like it looks really good. And then I'm pretty happy with the result. And then Pete will send me another script. And then several months later, I will get around to doing it. Because I don't get paid.
Yeah. Well, that said, though, you were talking about this a little bit backstage. You guys have been going at it long enough that you feel like the art has grown, that it's changed. Yep. You were talking about this, Pete, a little bit.
Yeah. One of the nice compliments that I get is, like, from where it started to where it is really kind of...
It started with me just cutting out high and lowest comics.
Right, and just pasting them on
yeah,
the page.
Exactly, and then
that,
changing
again,
the words.
I want to remind you I'm a copyright cop, mm-hmm. so just be careful what you're saying here.
Oh, that's not allowed?
Yeah, no, you're not allowed to reprint
what,
other
what
people's
What about
words.
Wizard of Id?
That's fine. That's okay. fair game.
Okay.
Yeah, that and Hagar the Horrible. There's actually no rights. It's
Well, if
fair.
if you add comedy to that one, you're only enhancing
right,
it.
Right, exactly. Yeah, same as the lock horns.
That Lockhorn is a delightful a delightful look at two people who should have divorced centuries ago.
No. Yeah.
So where, I'm going to be your parents for a second.
Right.
Where are you going with this? What are you going to do with this strip?
Well, you know, we're just trying to put a, you know, strip out there, and who knows what it can lead to. Hopefully it leads to him getting work because he's an amazing artist. Hopefully somebody says, hey, I want you to write this somewhere else, or, you know. It's just, you know, right now it's a dollar and a dream.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, for me, it's, you know, as a, when I was younger, like I would do my own comic strips and comic books. And, so it's more like it got me back into doing sequential art. 'Cause for a good 15 years, all I did was, you know, single art, like pieces of art. And then, doing sequential art is, it's a different art form, which is going back to the improvement in the art. It, you know, it's a skill you have to hone because, you know, if you read, like, I'm a big old comic book fan. Like, I read 60s stuff all the time. And some of the artists, they're very, like, the panels are very static. The camera angles are also relatively static. And then, like, if you read the original run of Iron Man, then suddenly you get Gene Colan. And, like, suddenly he's doing these, like, really cinematic panels. Like, I try to internalize that and come up with ways to, like, how can I incorporate that? Sometimes successfully, sometimes unsuccessfully. But the more you do it, the better you get at it, surprisingly. but that's my, the biggest benefit for me. Like, I mean, it'd be great if something happened commercially, but if it not, it's still just like, you know, honing your chops. Mm-hmm. And who doesn't like to hone chops?
Everybody loves chops.
Yeah.
Chops are one of my favorite things. Where can people find Captain Jones?
Well, they can go to the Blogspot, right? And they can also go to my website.
The what?
The Blogspot.
Blogspot. We're very professional.
Yeah. Oh, Blogspot. Yeah. Here, actually, I'm going to ask you to pitch it because Pete occasionally forgets his own Twitter address. What? Where can people check it out?
It's capjones.blogspot.com. And then Pete does know his own.
It's Pete. / LePage at Squarespace.
You did forget it, though.
Squarespace.com.
All right, very cool. And how often does it come out?
Depends on how busy I am, really.
Yeah, all right. But it was monthly for a while. It was every month.
Yeah.
Are you shaming him right now? Are you shaming my friend Tim?
No, I would never do that.
Okay, please.
Because I want him to be busy, and I want him to, you know, get paid for cool stuff. You know, and hopefully there'll be a time where I can pay him and be like, hey, man, here's some money.
Well, why don't you take some of the money we make off of this show and pay him for doing that?
What money on this show?
I don't know.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. You were doing everything for free. It's for the love, Pete.
I know.
It's for love. It's for honing chops.
Yes.
Exactly.
Well, Captain Jones is great. I know I'm giving you a little bit of a hard time, but I read it. I enjoy it. It's fun. All of you guys should check it out, too, whether you're here live in the audience or listening at home.
Thank you.
And I think we're going to move on to our next section, which we like to call The Stack.
Yeah.
Yay.
Yay. And in The Stack, we talk about some comic books that came out this week and go to bat for them. Not going to make a pun. Batman, number 51. Now, what makes this particularly notable is this is the end of writer Scott Snyder and artist Greg Capullo's epic run on Batman.
Epic is right.
Yeah, they've done it for a very long time now. And this
so
is the last
amazingly
issue
too.
Together.
Yeah.
What do you guys think? I mean, beyond this issue, which is a very nice issue called Gotham Is, that essentially is Batman investigating a crime or investigating a blackout, but really it's their chance to go through Gotham and show off Gotham, which has been the major feature of
Yeah, this
run.
Really feels like they're setting things up, kind of giving you a base of what's to come.
You think so? To me, this felt like a coda. This felt like them saying goodbye, them showing overall this is what our run is about. It was about Batman's relationship with Gotham.
Oh, I don't know. I felt like it was just a weird kind of like Batman running around and be like, nothing to see here. All right. Oh, guess what? That creepy guy's still at the bench by the water. Oh, that. I guess that is kind of an homage to all the things they did, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they were touching back.
Now that you say that and I think about it, yeah, that makes more sense. Because right. I was like, why are you just kind of highlighting the shit we've already seen? This is a waste of an issue. But, yeah, I guess it is kind of a nice victory lap. And they deserve it because their run was phenomenal. But there was a really kind of crazy moments there where Alfred's like, who the fuck is this guy?
I mean, to be fair to you, Pete, there is a fair amount of setting up for the future. Scott Snyder is going to be writing an all-star Batman title that he's doing with a bunch of different artists, so he may be picking up that stuff there. Definitely whoever's taking over Batman and Detective Comics might pick up that stuff as well. But yeah, overall, I think it's them saying goodbye to their run. Was there anything in particular from their run, from all of their issues, that you think was the absolute best, that really resonated for you in the best way?
I have to say the Joker was...
Endgame?
Yeah. Oh, that was so scary and so powerful. I was just really... I mean, the Court of Owls was also an amazing... I mean, it... Every single kind of arc had some really amazing moments, but I think it was one of my favorite Batman stuff.
So if you didn't read the Joker Endgame one, that was basically the final battle, or supposedly, or in their run, the final battle between the Joker and Batman, where both of them actually died for a little bit, for an issue or two. Mm-hmm. But it was pretty epic. I would say Court of Owls for me.
Yeah.
So this is, again, if you didn't read it, revealed that there was this secret society going back to the beginning of Gotham called the Court of Owls that was a bunch of rich peoples in creepy owl masks that were controlling everything in Gotham. And the reason I think that's so great, beyond it being so creative and so dark and the issues, particularly where Bruce was thrown into this maze by the Court of Owls.
Oh, yeah, you remember
like
that?
Maze,
and you had to, like, turn the comic.
Yeah, to turn the comic to read it. It was awesome.
And it was also one of those ones where I was pissed to have it digitally, because I was like, this doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
Where you actually needed the actual
right,
comic.
Right, you keep twisting it, and it keeps stretching the right way.
Yeah, it was really fucked up.
Terrible. Yeah. Terrible. Digital is terrible. but the thing that I think is great about that is one of those things that has become a part of Batman mythos, that it's such a strong idea that it's going to be like the Joker, like the Riddler, like all of these classic villains, something that's going to be used for decades to come. Which is great. What about you, Tim?
I agree with you. I thought that was an amazing story overall. And I honestly believe what you just said, like, nails it. That it's an element of the modern Batman mythos that feels as well developed in as a part of the core of Batman as those classic villains, which I always feel like in modern comics, that's you're standing up against so much history that it's hard to make
especially
your own mark. Yeah, especially Batman, because nobody's got a rogues gallery like this dude. And overall, I think their run was mind blowing. And for to just say as politely as possible, I'm not the biggest fan of DC recently. But I will say that of their current teams, I think they were the ones that felt the most like the DC I fell in love with originally. Yeah. Like, I really think they nailed Batman as a character, which is great because, you know, Batman's Batman. So,
are you looking forward to DC Rebirth?
With trepidation. Well, cautiously optimistic.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
Nice.
That's nice.
Yeah.
I like it. All right, cool. Let's move on with another pick. This is Doctor Strange, number 7 from Marvel Comics. Pete, you want to talk about this one?
Yes.
Thank you.
Discussed before. I love the marriage of art and writing in this book. Really works well with Doctor Strange. They have such a creative, amazing...
So it's Jason Aaron writing and Chris Bacciolo...
On art.
Okay.
Yeah. And this... issue in particular made me laugh out loud. And it's such a
Why did it make you laugh out loud? I want to hear.
Because we have this really tense moment where magic...
So, I mean, just to give a little bit of the background, which I'm surprised you laughed at it. So, magic has been destroyed from the entire world by this...
Almost completely
by this race of beings called the Empirical, who hate magic.
They believe in only science.
Only science. They want to rip it out of the world. All the world's magicians have been beaten, are being killed and trapped.
Tortured.
And what did you find funny again?
So there's this short, older, drunk dude who shows up, and he is
hilarious.
Talking shit to these people who are just winning this battle. And he's like, all the magic is gone. And he's like, you sound like my ex-wife. I was just like, this is hilarious. This comic relief at such a tense moment. It was just great because he also had like a silly little wand that no one would believe that he actually has magic in that wand. And he's able to, you know, kind of in his last move, zap all the remaining.
Did you, I don't want to project too much, but right. Were you reading this and being like, oh, I want that to be me when I'm old?
Now that you say that, that would be really great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
An old, drunk, bearded man.
Yeah, who just wanders into situations and like
with
relieves
his tiny
tension.
Stick.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I don't know about the tiny stick, but yeah, I just think, I thought it was just a great kind of, because you just are like, oh, this is it. They're dead. They're done. And then you have this hilarious little drunk guy who like comes and like saves the day.
Yeah. What'd you think about this book, Tim?
So this whole volume of Doctor Strange, I think, is great. Because Doctor Strange is a hit and miss character for me. And like going back to the original Ditko Doctor Strange, like that to me is phenomenal, especially once they really get running with the character. And then the Oath, I thought, was a really solid run. But then, like, in between, I don't know. But this whole series feels like a nice kind of return to, well, also, like, expanding upon the original version of the character, at least as I always knew Doctor Strange. And I do, like, I'm an art-first guy, unsurprisingly, as an artist myself. And I really like... When they do the visuals and, you know, any of the mystical stuff, I really do feel like it captures in a modern way what Ditko was doing originally, because that was all, you know, out of Ditko's brain. Like, no one was doing that.
Yeah, we talked about this a little bit on the show before about this title, but the thing that's great about it is that it has that weirdness of Doctor Strange, which is inherent in the title, but it's based in superhero comics, so it's still... Doctor Strange literally sometimes kicking ass, beating people up, using crazy magic, having jokes, allowing it to be more than, by the hoary hairs of Visgoth, I am going to, et cetera, et cetera. So it's great.
Yeah, and also, like, it also, a couple issues back, really deals with the pain of magic, like the stuff that Doctor Strange has to go through to be able to cast such big spells and stuff like that, which I thought was also a really creative take on the character.
Cool.
Making it seem fresh with the, you know, a nice, kind of still honoring what was before it.
Yeah, it's nice and fresh.
Yeah.
It's a fresh book. Fresh out the oven. Cool, let's move on. This is one of my picks. Aliens Defiance, number one from Dark Horse Comics. Are any of you guys reading the Aliens or Predator books from Dark Horse? Woo! For those of you listening at home, 3,000 people just screamed at once, but it was so loud only dogs could hear it.
Yeah.
But they're very excited about it. And I'm also very excited about it. If you aren't reading them, you absolutely should. It's anybody who has read any of the Dark Horse books going back decades at this point knows that usually the Aliens and Predator books are really good. Mm-hmm. Like, the comics are really excellent. The movies recently have been a little more hit and miss, but the comics have been pretty consistent. They rebooted both franchises to be an overarching story with Prometheus at the same time, about, I want to say, a year ago, and those comics were pretty good. But now they're entering a new story arc, which hasn't really connected in the same way yet. The other one was like one massive crossover. This, they relaunched a Predator book. Now they have this Aliens Defiance book by Brian Wood, and it's excellent. The thing that's particularly great about it is I feel like we hit this rut with alien stories where this hits a lot of the same tropes. There's a lone kick-ass woman who is a colonial marine. She is sent into space with a bunch of androids to go check out an abandoned ship that's floating off course.
Right,
you
there.
Know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
She's like, okay, we'll go into the ship, and I'll spoil the whole book for you, so if you don't want to listen, don't listen, but I think this is part of the hook for me, is she goes into the ship, and the aliens, of course, attack, and they start ripping apart the androids. She's like, oh, God, what is going to happen? One of the androids takes her, throws her into a room to lock her safe, and you're like, all right, aliens are going to rip apart all the androids, right? And then she's going to be alone on the ship having to take out the aliens. And the exact opposite happens. She gets knocked out, wakes up a couple of days later after they've healed her some of her wounds. most of the androids that survived, they're like, yeah, we took out the aliens. And not only that, but Weyland-Yutani wants to use these aliens as weapons. We're going to fight against our programming, go against that. Let's instead take the ship, track down all the aliens in the universe, and murder them. Because we don't want them to be weapons. Yeah. And it's awesome.
That sounds amazing.
It's great. And I know it sounds like I ruined most of the issue.
You did.
But there's a lot of great character stuff where they have flashbacks with this new female character that are really cool and give her a lot of layers. And it's great. I love this book.
Yeah, but didn't you think that, like, as soon as she woke up, you're like, how long till right out of the stomach? Like,
oh, sure. Yeah, but it seems like from the end that's not going to happen.
Yeah,
like, I think part of the idea of the series is you know the tropes of an Aliens book going in or an Aliens movie, and this isn't following those at all.
Yeah, it's doing a great job of making different choices but honoring what you love. And it's also good because I was like, this first issue, are we really going to see aliens in it? And yes, you get it, so it's exciting.
Yeah, it's basically like, I mean, you saw Prometheus, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so Prometheus, their idea of science being like, let's poke the horrible-looking thing until it eats us and infects us. This is the exact opposite, and it's great, where they even make a point where the androids are like, oh, by the way, we found an entire cargo bay full of eggs. We set them on fire and then shot them out of the ship, just so you know. So
what an idea.
Don't worry about that. We're good there. So it's great. Really, really good book.
Yeah, it's hard to trust an android after you've woken up for 27 days that, like, he just kind of was like...
Do you know this from experience?
No. Okay. Unless you're an android, otherwise, yes.
Because I don't trust you. I'm a copyright cop.
Yeah, all right. Cop, android, same thing. But.
Whoa. Great political commentary.
Just slide that underneath. Yeah. But I feel like it's hard to just trust everything he's saying, especially because he makes it a point to be like, I went against all my programming. It's like, did you though? You know? Because you're a fucking robot. So.
Stop being racist.
Well, but yeah, I just feel that, like, it's a fantastic first issue, though.
Cool.
Because Brian Wood's an amazing writer.
Well, let's move on from first issues to last issues, right? Four Eyes, Hearts of Fire, number 4 from Image Comics.
What do you mean last issue?
Well, this is the last issue of Hearts of Fire, right?
Oh, okay. 4 of 4? Jesus Christ.
Not ever.
Almost had a mini heart attack.
Jesus beans.
Four Eyes is an amazing comic.
Yeah, would you give it 4 eyes up?
I would give it 4 out of 4.
Yeah, eyes?
Sure.
Great. You love this book.
Yep.
Tell people about it. Why should they pick it up?
Well, Joe Kelly is a very versatile writer. He does a lot of amazing stuff. And this is kind of a very creative take on a very tough time. It's kind of Depression era stuff going on. And it's a story of a little poor kid who discovers a talent that is kind of in his family, and that's to train dragons. And dragons are real, which is very fun and unique.
That's very helpful, given that he has the talent.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it would be a little useless.
Yeah, it would be.
I might have the talent.
I might, too. It's going to be going to waste. This book deals with a lot of great stuff. A kid growing up in tough times, but he kind of has his dragon, which makes it kind of a little bit more kind of magical in a way.
You already said that.
Escaping kind of his problems, if you will.
May I jump in?
Sure.
Sure. So Depression Era Dragon, we left it off where they were fighting. Four Eyes, who was a blind dragon, was going to lose the fight. Mm-hmm. This issue, we find out the result of that fight. Some good things maybe happen. Some really bad things happen.
Yeah.
The one thing that I will spoil without spoiling anything is it has a super sad ending. And this, we talked...
But how many miracles can the kid have in one day?
Sure.
You know?
We talked about this after the third issue, that the thing that's kind of wonderful and sad and amazing about Four Eyes and the way that Kelly writes it is... You think the arc is going to be this movie arc of, come on, and then we get back and we fight and we win.
Yeah.
But he gives it a level of realism, even though there's dragons in the story, that means if there should be a sad end for this character, there's going to be a sad end for this character.
Yeah, and it's one of those things where this isn't the Disney How to Train Your Dragon where Lil Kim
found
DreamWorks.
DreamWorks.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ, Pete.
Same
thing?
Well, kind of.
DreamWorks made Shrek.
Yeah.
Disney made non-terrible stuff.
Really? All the Shreks you think are awful?
Yeah.
Have you seen Shrek recently? Yes.
Yeah, sure. I'm not talking about the last one. That's why I said all.
No,
like,
no, the
earlier.
Original. Have you seen the original Shrek recently?
Not recently, no. But as I recall, it was funny. All right, fine. I'll be alone on that. Anyways, I feel like this is different than that. It's a very the fact that it doesn't shy away from the time and shy away from what this kid's problems are is very powerful.
Sort of like in Shrek, where it didn't shy away from fairy tale times.
Fuck you.
Anyway, this book is great. Tim, did you get a chance to check it out?
I did. First of all, like I said earlier, I'm an art first guy, and I'm sure you guys have talked about this in the previous issues, but the art is stunning.
Right. And also the way they use color every little bit, you know.
The fact that it's almost monochromatic but not quite.
Yeah.
Like in everything's in a wash or highlighted. It's really like visual, without even the dialogue or the captions, like you could immerse yourself in this book. And then like you guys said, like the mixture of the fantasy in the feeling of reality, like the authenticity of what's going on it's an amazing book, amazing series.
Yeah, that's great. All right, and that's it for the stack. Guys, it's time for our next section, which is my favorite section because I get to come out to you guys. It's your audience questions.
Hooray!
And in audience questions, all you got to do is raise your hand, and you're going to win some free comics and a poster from modhero.com. I saw this hand shoot up right here, so I'm going to see if I can stretch the mic all the way to you. I can. What is your name, and what is your question?
My name is Connor.
Hey, Connor.
Hello. I just recently saw an advertisement for Preacher. I was wondering, do you reckon AMC are going to let it be as mental as it actually is?
Well...
Yeah, well, how deep you want to get into this, Zalbin?
I actually watched the first episode of Preacher today, but I can't talk about it yet. Legally, I can't talk about it yet. But if you come see me after the show, I'll tell you that I liked it.
And you're a big Preacher fan, because you...
All right. Okay. All right. So before the show, I was talking with Pete. I was telling him a little bit backstage about what I thought about the pilot for the show.
Right.
And I said, you know, this thing maybe changed, this other thing maybe changed a little bit. And then I paused and I said, Pete, I'm going to tell you something and you're going to get really mad at me. Mm-hmm. And Pete said, what is it? Don't tell me what it is, but tell me why I'm going to get mad at you.
Yeah, I wanted to know why I would get mad first to, like, be ready for this thing.
And then I admitted a thing to him, which is that I read Preacher last week for the first time.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, here's the thing.
Nerd card taken away. Thank you.
After 10 years of hosting a live comic book talk show, my nerd card got taken away. This is the thing that bothers me a little bit about nerd culture is that you are expected to read everything.
Right.
And Preacher is one of those ones that when I read it, I really wanted to read it. I wanted to sit down and read it. And there's so much stuff that we're constantly reading and consuming on a daily basis, I've just never gotten around to it. But with the show coming up, I wanted to make sure to read the comic before I watched the show, and I'm glad I did. It's amazing. I don't have to tell you guys that, but it absolutely is.
Yeah, welcome to the world. It's fucking amazing.
All right, sorry,
Preacher,
Pete.
Is fucking amazing.
Great. Wait, what have you not read, though? I'm sure there's things you haven't read, like seminal works.
Yeah, I have my dirty secrets.
Like what?
I've never read the original Swamp Thing.
What? Wait, okay. What, Tim, what's your dirty secret? What's your dirty comic book secret?
Ooh, boy. I've got big gaps. Big gaps. What's a good one? I only read Watchmen like 2 years ago.
Wow. Oh.
Yeah. That was the first
That's like the holy grail.
It's so like, but it, you know, it's Alan Moore, you know it's gonna be depressing. I'm like,
really?
He's so good, but it's like, oh, God.
Depressing?
He's an amazing writer, but it's like, it was actually Gibbons' art that did it for me.
Wow.
Oh, that you liked.
Yeah. Not well, I mean, like, I like the story.
I don't
know
if I agree with the depressing part.
It's, well, I mean,
you
like.
You don't think Watchmen is depressing?
I do and
it's
I don't.
Fun LARP
it's about how if superheroes are real, everything would be awful.
Right, but also, like, I think the Rorschach moments are so amazing to me, it makes me happy.
I mean, there's amazing things in it. It's just depressing.
Yeah. Listen, I mean, there was an interview with Zack Snyder, actually, about Watchmen that was recirculated a lot this week, and I think he summed it up best when he said that in the world of Watchmen, if Batman was in there, he would have gotten raped in prison. And that's the sort of world that exists in Zack Snyder's movie.
Why is he in charge of shit?
I'm not quite sure.
Because the world is unfair.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you, Boothman Prime. The world is unfair. Cool. Here's what I'll say about Preacher. I will talk about it in full without spoilers next week. Is that fair? Good.
Yeah.
Is that good? So come back next
week. What
was
your original question about it, though?
Do you think it's going to be as mental on AMC?
No, I mean, they can't do a lot of the stuff. But they did such a great job with Walking Dead. I think that hopefully do it in a way that doesn't piss us off because we love Preacher so much. And they'll hopefully do it in a way that's like, oh, that's a cool take, or oh, that's interesting, or I love the story so much that it'll be enjoyable to watch as, hey, this is separate, because it can't be. There's no way they can do it. There's no way. I don't know. I don't know why they do it. That's the trap of the adaptation. Yeah, I mean, there's going to be that thing of like, you ruined something that was great, or it could be something that's like, I can separate the two because this is still good, you know? We'll see, though. Yeah, you're giving nonverbal cues to the
live
audience.
What? No, I'm not breaking an NDA.
That's why it pays to show up for the live show.
I'm just saying, I didn't disclose anything. So there you go. Cool, you're going to get some free comics. Let's get another question. You right there, why don't you come? Let me see if I can stretch it. Yes. All right, what's your name? What's your question?
My name is Stephanie.
Hi, Stephanie.
Hey.
Hi.
First, I want to say I'm with Pete about Shrek and Preacher. So I'm
hell
with
yeah! Stephanie.
I have a kind of a weird question.
All right.
I saw a drawing I don't remember how long ago it was, of the Joker, and it seemed a little overly sexualized. Right? So my question is, what do you guys think his sexuality actually is, or if he has one at all?
Interesting.
That's a really interesting question. Before you leave, I'm curious, without getting too gross, how was it, like, was he posed overly sexually?
Yeah, he was, like, kind of, like, touching his chest in a way, and I'm just looking at this picture, like, I didn't like it. It was just kind of awkward for me.
No, that's a really interesting thing. I mean, what do you guys think about that?
I mean, Up until I guess like I don't know, like the New 52 Harley Quinn. Mm-hmm. I always thought of the Joker as pretty asexual. Mm-hmm. That his whole thing was his insanity and his love of chaos and destroying things, and like that was what he got pleasure from. And something as ordinary as whatever kind of sexuality you might want to give him is like it seems antithetical to what has driven the character for at least like the last 30 years or so. That's my thought.
No, I agree with you. I think there's something that's already struck me as very weird about Joker and Harley Quinn in particular, because she's supposed to be his girlfriend, right? But every time I see them in some situation where she's draped over him or anything like that, I always think, what if they've been doing, and there's this disconnect where, not to get totally gross, but to think of like, oh, okay, then Joker and Harley Quinn go and have sex, just doesn't seem to me like anything that would ever actually happen.
Like in the original animated series, obviously they're limited in what they can show, but I actually think that captures what I always thought was a really authentic relationship between them, where it's Harley's in love with the Joker, and the Joker is in love with the destruction Harley can cause and is just using her for that end. That's my take.
I would first like to say overly sexualized in comics, that's ridiculous. but it is one of those things where I don't really think about it when it comes to the Joker, because I'm always so consumed with what he's going to do next and what evil plans he has. But there was part of me that, like, wanted there to be a side to the Joker that he loved how, like, there was a relatability, like, Harley Quinn is out of his gourd, he's out of his gourd, that they could kind of find a crazy love together. But that's just a weird
thought.
Or
a mad love?
Yeah. But, yeah, it's one of those things that I don't stop and think about it, and not till now has it ever occurred to me. And I almost feel like if they made a choice with it, it wouldn't be like, oh, that's not the Joker. Like, I don't think it's like because to me he's so asexual that I don't think there is a part that would throw me out of the story.
Part of it, too, is that I can't imagine the Joker being gentle or kind or giving or like a giving lover to anybody. So,
wow.
Well, seriously.
But no, I believed you. No, it just blew my mind.
Well, which I think
he's surprisingly tender.
Yeah. That's it. Right, exactly. I don't know. Sexuality in comics is very weird. I feel like there's a weird line. Like, seeing Bruce Wayne have sex to somebody, not literally, like, penetration sex with him.
Just happened?
I don't know. All I'm saying is that Bruce Wayne waking up in the sheets with somebody, totally fine, understood, he's a billionaire playboy. But whenever there's a sex scene with Superman, always weirds me out. Like, I know he probably has sex with Lois when they're married and whatever, but I don't need to see it.
Weird, man.
You need to see it? Is that?
That
was the implication.
Either one of them having sex doesn't, I don't, well, okay, great. Let's get to what the comic's about.
What if it's about sex?
I don't know if I'd read that issue. Like, hey man, did you see the latest Superman comic? They're having sex a whole issue. I don't think I'd buy that.
So it's like the death of Superman, but it's the sex of Superman. So it's just full
splash page after splash page.
Yeah. Oh man.
Gross if you think about it.
Yeah, eventually Doomsday and just bounce motors against each other.
Oh, right. We should probably get another question.
I don't think so. This is a good one. Let's stay with this. We can actually get another question. Raise your hand. Anybody? You, sir, over there. What's your name? What's your question?
My name is Louis. And
hey, what's up, Louis?
What's up? And if you could write or draw any superhero, who would it be and why?
Oh, that's a great question.
What would it be, Pete?
Punisher. I would love if Marvel was
really?
If Marvel was like,
really? You
know,
you like the Punisher?
If
since I'll when?
Give me like
when did
three
start?
Pages in the back of a fucking backup story. It would be amazing.
What would it be about?
It would just be about the Punisher just murdering people. It would be amazing. It would be amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just all the dialogue for three pages is,
I don't think it would be that much. I think you're
too
overdoing
wordy?
It. Yeah, too wordy.
Okay.
But I do, in my heart of hearts, feel like that I could do a great Punisher comic.
Wait, Pete, we were going to talk about this in Week in Geek, but they greenlit the Punisher series at Netflix. What do you think about that?
It's the renaissance of the Punisher right now, ladies and gentlemen. We're in the renaissance.
The renaissance.
And Wednesday is Punisher Day because we get Punisher number one and Daredevil Punisher number one.
The Punisher is like a renaissance man, but instead of painting a ceiling with beautiful pictures, he paints the floor with blood.
Also the walls and the ceiling.
Right, yes.
You know, there's a lot. Yeah, exactly. There's a lot of things he uses for a tapestry.
Cool. If you could write or draw any superhero.
No question, I'd do Spider-Man.
Oh, wow.
He's got... The thing about Spider-Man is that I think, like, kinetically, he's got the broadest potential while still being able to be, like, a physical thing. Like, he maintains mass and like, there's a sense of gravity that he's defying rather than, like, Superman who's just floating through the air. And then, obviously, the Spider-Man Rogues Gallery is, like, as good as Batman's. But I think visually, because they all came around in the 60s and 70s mostly, I think their costume designs are awesome. As long, like, that's the thing. Kind of like Sam Raimi was doing an adaptation of the Ditko Romita Spider-Man. That's the Spider-Man that I would by far want to draw.
Yeah, good luck getting that away from Dan Slott, though.
Never gonna.
Yeah, you're gonna have to. Yeah. Marvel is gonna have to plan his death to get that comic away from him.
Dan Slott?
Yeah, there's
Jesus no, Christ, Pete.
That's not gonna be drawing Spider-Man.
Are you trying to kill Dan Slott?
No,
he is a friend of the show.
I love Dan Slott.
All right, stop trying to kill him. I'm just saying.
Jesus, I'm just saying the guy.
I'm gonna report you.
Is
to the copyright authorities.
Shut up. Android Zelbin.
Yeah. Well, let's go kill some aliens. I think we can take one more question, right?
Yep.
All right. Raise your hand if you got a question. Absolutely. Anybody? Anything? You, sir. Tentative man over there. What's your name? What's your question?
My name's EJ, and my question is to, well, all of you have now read the new Doctor Strange. You talked about it. What do you think of the Last Days of Magic anthology that was in the back of the last issue and had its own issue this week?
Did you guys read that? Anybody? Tim? Pete? Yeah. You did? Pete?
Yeah.
Oh, Pete, you're wandering away. Pete, come back. Pete? Pete?
Pete's grabbing the
Pete,
comic.
Pete, grab the mic. Nope, not that. Not that comic. Not that comic. The Last Days of Magic comic.
Oh.
Did you pick that up?
Nope.
Oh, okay. All right. Thanks
I thought
for,
he was talking about
thanks
something
for delaying
else.
That much. So for those of you who didn't pick it up,
that
like
was a
Pete,
lot of anticipation.
Yeah,
it
was. So there's a real build up for that. So there was in the last issue of Doctor Strange, these beings, the Empirical, destroyed all magic. We got a couple of quick one or two page things showing what was happening around the world to other magicians while that was happening. And then this week, along with the new issue of Doctor Strange, they released I actually think it's a mini series anthology showing different magicians all over the globe and how they're dealing with the Empirical. That's a long way of answering your question of, it was really good. There were a bunch of great writers on it, great artists on it. It was really cool. Showed off these very different magicians that deal with magic in a very different way than Doctor Strange. And like how this book is taking Doctor Strange in new directions, this book took the world of magic in the Marvel Universe and brought it in many different directions and gave it many different colors and themes and ideas, and it was really cool. So, Pete, you should definitely pick it up.
Yeah, I mean, I saw a little bit in the back issues, and I meant to grab it. For some reason, I missed it in the comic book store. But I do think that, like, this is such a kind of, like, big event that this is one of the few times that I'm glad they have other kind of comics exploring this idea a little bit, because I feel like the weight of it does deserve that. What'd you think, EJ?
Personally, I really enjoyed it. I think that magic in Marvel hasn't gotten really too... We've kind of gotten over stuff with cosmic Marvel and all of these outer space and overly technical things. And I've always been a fan of, like, the older magical character. Like, I love Brother Voodoo, who's on the Avengers now. And he's in the issue. He's got probably my favorite story in the issue. And it's just seeing all these different styles of magic. It really opens up Mystic Marvel in a way that it hasn't done in, I think, a really long time.
Cool.
What I was going to say was that to expand a little bit on what EJ just said there, was that with Marvel, the superheroes and the cosmic, it's like what it sounds like you may be saying, correct me if I'm wrong, but like even though it's a comic book and it can be anything, they've got these fairly well set rules, and then magic can be anything at all. And in Marvel mystical characters, it can look like anything. So it's got a broader scope visually and storytelling wise. So it's nice to see a variety of that, because the possibilities are limitless.
Yeah there we go. Limitless now on CBS, I want to say. I don't know. Something like that. All right, that's it for your audience questions.
Yay!
All right, guys. Yay! I think we're going to move to our next section, which is trivia. And for that, we're going to go over to Pete.
All right, guys. Opportunity. All right, first hand up guy. Yeah, come on down.
Come
all right,
down.
This is an opportunity to win $25 free in the form of a gift card to Midtown Comics. Take the microphone. What is your name, sir?
Jeff.
Jeff, audience Jeff.
Hey, Jeff.
Hey, Jeff. All right, Jeff, how this is going to work is I'm going to read you a question. Listen to all three possible answers. Midtown gift card for $25 is yours. Because if you had $25, you'd go to a comic book shop anyway.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, so this week's trivia is This Week in Comic News. Okay, what number one comic has sold over 330,000 issues since April 6th? Is it A, Black Panther, B, Four Eyes, or C, Garfield? So it's either A, Black Panther, or it's B or C.
I'll go with my favorite comic book character, Black Panther.
Yeah, nice. Woo. Well, that was good timing. Cool. Question number two. Who has been announced to be doing variant covers for Marvel? Is it A, Jim Lee, B, Jim Steranko, or C, Jim Davis? So it's either A, Jim Lee, which doesn't make any sense, or it's B, Jim Steranko.
I'm going to go B.
Yes, B is correct. I'm very excited about this. Okay, last question. In DC's Rebirth, which we're all nervously maybe excited for, who is the writer for June's Wonder Woman number one? Is it A, Greg Rucka, B, Brian Azzarello, or C, Odie? So it's either A, Greg Rucka, or it's B, don't pick it, Brian Azzarello.
I'm going to go A.
A is correct. $25. Jeff. Here you go.
Unbelievable.
All in one place, sir. Congrats.
Fantastic.
I really, really thought it was Odie.
Odie, yeah.
No, it's your trivia gets harder.
It's
going to
be Odie or Pookie.
Yeah. Nermal, definitely not.
Nah, definitely
no,
not Nermal.
Not a chance.
No, God.
He's too busy being
anyway,
cute.
You know, actually, tomorrow is New Comic Book Day. That's a great way to pick up new Garfield comic books or whatever you guys like to read. We recommend you go to Midtown Comics. They've been nice enough to sponsor the show. What are you guys looking forward to that's coming out?
Well, there's a lot of great stuff coming out.
Choose one thing.
Well, I always plug the Punisher books that are coming out. So I'm going to say then Hellboy in Hell number 9.
Yeah, any particular reason?
Just because it's been a long time since the last issue, and I'm really excited for Hellboy to finally get out of hell so he can help all the craziness that's going on in Earth.
Yeah, I don't think he is. I think he's going to stay in hell.
Fuck you, man. That's not true.
I mean, I don't know, but...
I don't know either, but I hope you're fucking wrong, man.
I think I'm right.
Fuck you, man.
Right. I'm looking forward to Star Trek Manifest Destiny number 2 is coming out from IDW Comics. Shut up, Pete. I know I talk about these Star Trek books all the time, but yep. They're really good. And this one, Star Trek Manifest Destiny, is the action movie part of Star Trek. The crew of the Enterprise ends up in this alien world. It's set in the continuity of the new movies. And the Enterprise goes to this alien planet to be taken over by some rogue Klingons. And basically, we left off of the last issue with an entire ship full of Klingons shooting at them in space, like outside of the ship and starting to drill through the outside of the Starship Enterprise.
Man.
It's really cool and really fun. Shut up, Pete. All right, Tim, what are you looking forward to?
I'm looking forward to Superman Coming of the Supermen number 4.
Speaking of sexualizing Superman.
Yeah. No, I could not love Neil Adams anymore. He's top 3 artists of all time for me.
Wow.
I love the fact that it is classic Superman and not this loser from the New 52.
Oh.
Strong opinions. And it just is seeing Superman in, except for the belt, I hate the belt, but the rest of the Superman costume, the classic Superman costume, like in the story itself is such a like it feels like a 70s Superman story, which I love. Cool. I love that it just feels classic and that it's like the Kirby design for the New Gods stuff. It's like Neil Adams gets it. Everyone else at DC. Idiots.
Oh, my God, dude.
Wow.
Jesus. I may be exaggerating. Odie works for DC, right?
Yep.
He gets kicked off a table all the time.
All the time.
He's an idiot. Somebody gets a joke.
Yeah, there we go. Before we mail you to Abu Dhabi, anything else you want to plug?
So obviously Captain Jones with Mr. Peter LePage over there. I'm also on a Magnet House team called Pipe Dreams every Tuesday. I'm sprinted here from there just right before the show. The Magnet Improv Theater, it's just as good as the Pit.
Pitt's good too.
Sorry, is that their slogan? And does it have that? Does it have that high, sad voice?
Yeah.
Okay, just checking.
And just is underlined.
Neither of them are UCP, I guess.
Yeah, it's like, you know.
No, seriously, that's great. You should all go there on Tuesday nights. Except when you see these guys, then go over. It's a block from here.
Just come back and forth. Just run back and forth from comedy theaters all night long.
You can do that.
Absolutely.
That's the way to do it.
A couple of things to plug before we go. Next week on the show, big show, we're going to talk about Captain America Civil War. Justin, Pete, and I are going on a date this Thursday night to go see it.
Oh, my God. If Justin ruins this fucking movie for me, I'm going to fucking lose it. I will murder that motherfucker. Because we went and saw a movie together one time. He fucking took out his phone and started scrolling the movie.
So Pete and I are going to be hosting the show solo again next week.
Yeah,
because
he's going to die.
After he dies. So that'll be exciting. Also, I'll be free to talk about Preacher, so I guess look forward to that.
Right.
Sure, there you go. Also, John Patrick Green is going to be here. He's the creator of Teen Boat, which is one of my favorite books ever. It's ridiculous. It's about a teen that turns into a boat. and also First Seconds Hippopotamister, which is a ridiculous book as well that I believe is coming out soon. What else do you want to plug, Pete?
Friend us on Facebook so you get to know about all the amazing guests we have on the show.
Check us out at Twitter, @ComicBookLive, our website, comicbookclublive.com, nerdist.com for the podcast and more. Also, as we mentioned, we don't get paid to do the show.
Right.
It is free to do, but if you would like to donate a little bit of money, there's our physical hat over there in the theater, or our virtual hat. You can check out at home at GoFundMe.com/ComicBookClubLive. A couple of people we want to thank our fabulous interns, Iman Bell, Tom Dar, Craig Fletcher, David McKay, and Riley Trahan. We want to thank Tim for being on the show.
Hey!
Boothman Pride!
Hey. But most of all, we want to thank you guys. We're here every Tuesday night at 7:30 p.m. in New York, totally free. Please tell your friends. Good night!
Thanks, everybody. Thanks for coming out.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Just to have to remember, yeah. Every Tuesday night, yeah. Once a week, that blows your mind.